are going to talk about the changing role of the college professor this hour and what our guest calls the great stratification of academia. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, January 15th. Some have said we are witnessing the end, the last of the university professors, or the deprofessionalizing of the profession. But our guest says while the all-purpose college professor has faded, we are actually seeing the stratification of academia, increased specialties, and an unbalanced division of academic labor. What does this mean for higher education? Are you witnessing this? We would like to hear from professors and other academic workers this hour with your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Jeff Williams, an English professor at Carnegie Mellon University, one of the editors of the Norton Anthology of Theory and Criticism, and he wrote a piece that appeared in the Chronicle of Higher Education called The Great Stratification. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So what do you mean by the Great Stratification?
Well, I think typically we think of professors as one all-purpose being. I think we think of professionals like that, too, in general. We have an image of somebody who's a professional as kind of an old-fashioned doctor who hangs his or her shingle out and sets up business. And what has happened in the past 30 years is well, there used to be kind of a standard model professor, and it was a decent job and a good thing because our public universities especially were thriving, that over the past 30 years there's been this big separation, kind of like with milk and cream or something like that. Or maybe that's, I don't know if that's a good analogy, and then we have this, so what's developed is we have this separation. So a lot of the people teaching in college, in fact, now the statistics are nearly three-quarters have adjunct or part-time or so-called contingent jobs, and a quarter have normal full-time professorships. Mm-hmm. So most of the people teaching your kids, if your kids are going to college, are in fact not fully-fledged professors.
Yeah,
that's not their fault. They might be degreed, but the jobs have just been shaken out in a different way.
Why has that happened to the jobs?
I think it's generally a policy. A lot of times you hear that it's supply and demand, and that is that there's less demand, you know, presumably for professors. But actually, if you look at the statistics, the demographics of higher education in the U.S., through the past 100 years, they've steadily risen. And, you know, for instance, that there were about 600,000 students in 1920. There were 1.5 million in 1940. And so on, and now there's over 20 million. So the demand has actually risen, and a lot of there. At the same time, there've been a lot more college teachers, but the way those jobs have been managed and administered in very different ways, and they've been administered that, you know, some people have decent jobs. Like I'm a professor at Carnegie Mellon, and I'm tenured and everything like that, so I have a decent job. And whereas most of the others have become like part-time kind of Starbucks jobs. Not that's necessarily a bad job, but I mean, you know, part-time, not fully vested.
Yeah, you note in the piece that some have said, including here it says, Frank Donahue, a professor of English at Ohio State University, says we are living in the age of the last professors. Others say the professor has experienced deprofessionalization. Is that what is happening?
In some ways, it's what the sociologists call deprofessionalization. But I think it's more my account or my argument in that piece is that actually that's inaccurate insofar as, I mean, people in other words have a lot of qualifications. Like the PhD students that I would teach, for instance, you know, they have very few chances to get jobs, so they're not deprofessionalized. In fact, actually, now most people have higher credentials. in 1970, something like, I don't know, between 70 and 80% of people who are professors had PhDs. Now almost everybody does. So actually, that's why I think we can't just simply say it's deprofessionalization. Because I think the tendency is just to see it as this natural evolutionary course rather than it's the end result of the consequence of policies that we have.
Yeah. So tell us why we should worry about this, if we should at all.
Well, I think we should worry about it for a few reasons. I think that one reason is, it seems to me when I was growing up in the 70s, say, that there was it was a good object to have full employment with decent jobs. And now that doesn't really seem to be an object. It's like nice to have cheap things we should want, you know, everybody around us, I think, to have full and decent jobs that makes for a better world. And I think it's also, we have a new, I mean, the system is much more inequitable. So I think the goals, say in the era from after World War II to about 1970, there was a lot of drive for higher education to be an instrument of equality. That is that public higher education especially was relatively cheap, and many, many more people could go. Whereas now I think it's become an instrument of the opposite. It's not only it's producing inequality insofar as the people who work there, many of them have poor jobs. And also, you know, not to mention we could talk about student debt and other things like that.
Yeah. Well, what has to be done about this as far as you're concerned?
I think that, well, one way for professors, I think that we need to institute policies of full employment, that it's better, certainly to the people working, that it's fair to have full-time jobs at a normal rate of pay. It's also, presumably, too, before you ask about the benefits, and I should certainly add that, presumably, and by all the statistical markers, that it's better if you have people who are fully employed at an institution, that they're better teachers. It's not that people who are adjuncts would be poor teachers, but if they're running around with part-time jobs at six different schools, that they're probably not able to devote as much time or energy or history to a place. So it's, you know, it's a better condition for better teaching. But so anyway, obviously, you know, a policy that is directed toward the idea of full employment would be the best one.
Mm-hmm. Is this because, for example, state universities are not getting the public support that they used to?
Yeah, that's certainly perhaps a central factor. That if you look at the funding from four state universities, that people complain about tuition going up, but actually it's almost directly in accord with state funding going down and various other kinds of government funding going down. So I think that part of the policy would be the idea of direct public funding, and that's always a touchy issue. Nobody wants to pay more taxes, but in the period after World War II, when in fact, deficits were super high, there was massive public investment, and by almost all the tabulations, they thrived very, very well. I mean, if you invest in things like public higher education, and as well as public things like roads and things like that, you usually reap the benefit. It might take a number of years, but down the long term, it actually did benefit quite a bit. Like the GI Bill is the famous example in the literature on education, that for every $1 invested in the GI Bill for former GIs to go to college, that actually the return was supposed to have been $6.90, almost $7, which, you know, any stockbroker I think would agree is a very good investment.
We are talking with Jeff Williams, an English professor at Carnegie Mellon University. author of a piece that was printed in the Chronicle of Higher Education, The Great Stratification, talking about the stratification of academia. And we're welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, or your experiences. Any college professors or adjunct professors or part-time professors listening right now? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the changing role of the college professor, and we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's take our first caller, Joe in Milwaukee. Hello, Joe.
Hi. I'm a retired professor. And I guess my observations in this country, because I've taught abroad as well, and that's where I did my doctorate as well. And I think this country has dug itself, or the university system in this country has dug itself into a ditch in this sense, that if you still go to the British Isles, you'll find that universities, the heads of colleges, departments, obviously departments, but administration, I guess, is the word I'm looking for, they're all drawn from the college or the university. They don't go out and try to find people who are professional administrators. But about 30 or 40 years ago, that changed in the United States. Instead of drawing their administrators from their faculty, they started getting full-time administrators. They didn't want to be bothered, I guess, in many cases, with this type of work. Initially, what they do in Europe still, at least in the British Isles, is people will take time away from their teaching positions, say, to be a dean, and then go back to teaching. They may teach part-time. But this means that everything is kept between everyone. There's no... So if there are problems, you can talk to a colleague. What happens now is, in the United States, is that the administrator has nothing oftentimes to do with any kind of teaching. They're professional full-time administrators, and before you know it, they may decide to do away with your department, and you have no way of dealing with that. The other issue also, I think, that affects universities in this country, and this is something, of course, that's very different than the way higher education works here as it does, say, in the British Isles, where I'm most familiar, and that is that if you're doing a doctorate, for example, your guest, I think, is in English, if you're doing a doctorate, say, in Oxford, you would spend your entire time doing research. There are no programs, or you've done an honors degree. You have to have a certain level, in fact, a high level, to even be accepted into a doctoral program. But once you are accepted, there are no, enormous number of courses and all sorts of hurdles to go for until you finally get to your dissertation. You start immediately with your dissertation. And so the result is that there's no enormous need to draw students in to justify the existence of your graduate department. And in this country, it's quite the opposite. So many students are drawn in for no other reason than to keep the department alive. Now, that may be not true of Carnegie Mellon, but it's true of so many universities in this country that have PhD programs. They know their students aren't going to get jobs, certainly in academia, but they take them in anyway, because if they don't, their faculty won't have jobs.
Yeah, thank you very much, Joe. Hold on. Let's get our guest into the conversation here. A couple of big points there, Professor Williams. Where do you want to start?
Well, the first point about administration, it's in fact true what's happened in the past, say, since 1975. That's when a lot of the statistics are. I mean, that's why I keep going back to around 1975, that there were roughly like half the number of administrators and other professionals. That's the category that's used as there were professors, whereas now, So there were, say, 250 or 300,000 administrators and other professionals compared to 500,000 professors, whereas now there's still 500,000 people with fully fledged professorial jobs, and all the rest are, you know, like part-time or not as good positions. And now there's 750,000 administrators. So administrators, in fact, have outpaced, far outpaced professors. So I think that definitely needs to be looked at. I'm sure if you're within the university, there are all sorts of things that we didn't used to have, like, you know, various things in student affairs, but it does seem like there's a multiplication of administration. So I think that is, in fact, a problem. I think it's not entirely true that administrators don't come from faculty. I think that they still largely come from faculty. I mean, some of the more well-known college presidents are headhunted and are executives from other spheres of life. I think the problem is there's a bigger split at the caller. I think that's what the caller, you know, that was the import of what he was saying. If there is a bigger split, it seems like once you go from faculty to administration, it's like you go to a different boot camp and they start speaking administrative rhetoric rather than normal educational rhetoric. And then the other part about the European system and about the selectivity of students, I mean, the American system is a great system because it's fairly open. The European system, even though it has great aspects, for one thing, it's almost fully public, or historically most countries in Europe are almost fully public. That is, if you're a student, you're almost fully funded. So there'd often be strong systems. However, up until maybe 20 or 30 years ago, they were super selective, which I think there's a way that the openness of the American system has been a good democratic thing. And the flip side is that Europe is right now experiencing some of the same changes we have had in Britain. It's certainly being shifted. So I don't think it's any longer the case that it's the system that the caller described. So they're being whatever you would want to call it, you know, capitalized or neoliberalized or something like that, just as much as we are. And it's a tension there, and there are some riots there. But the great example of the European system is how they have a fully-fledged public system.
Joe, thanks for the call. We have lots of other callers. So before news, let me go to Amy in Shattuck. Hello, Amy.
Hello. Thanks so much for having such a wonderful topic. And, Jeff, I look forward very much to reading your article. I am currently an adjunct and have been for many years. I have a PhD in geography, and I don't really believe in the tenure system. I think that has a lot of faults of its own. But in my own experience as an adjunct, I've really, really suffered with the lack of knowing in advance whether I'll be employed semester to semester or year to year. And I've been pondering that, like, from a management perspective. Have any studies been done looking at the management at different institutions of why they leave till the last minute? I mean, sometimes adjuncts don't know till Christmas time whether they're going to be teaching in the spring or not. Why they, considering especially that, as you say, demand has been going up, that they just don't seem to know how to manage their labor needs to give adjuncts more certainty. I mean, it almost borders on cruelty.
Do you know what's happening there, Professor Williams?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, that's why I keep stressing that about fully-fledged positions as opposed to contingent positions, that now, according to a study the AAUP did, and there's massive statistics like from the Department of Education that they've drawn to find this out, that about three-quarters of people who have college teaching jobs have contingent so-called positions. Now, there's a variation between those. Some are part-time, some are adjunct, some are semester-to-semester, some are year-to-year, some have three-year contracts, so it varies. So that's why I usually distinguish fully-fledged rather than even saying tenured. And I think one problem is that sometimes people point to the problems and they say, like, if I were an adjunct, I would probably resent a tenured professor because it seems like they have it easy and I don't. But I think it's a natural kind of direction to look. But the thing is, I think we should all have, in effect, tenure or some sort of job security or job guarantees. A long, long time ago, believe it or not, before I was a professor, I was a correction officer in New York State, and this is in the early 80s. And I worked almost 3 years in the New York State system. And after a year, there was a probationary first year. I had job security after that. I mean, it's a fully unionized job, and there was job security. So I effectively had tenure for my whole working career. And just as with professors, if you do something wrong or if you call in sick all the time and you shouldn't, then, you know, you can get fired. There are actionable grounds to be removed from your job. But in fact, you know, so I would say everybody should have job security, whether you call it tenure or not.
Let me hold you there, because we do have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, and then we'll be back continuing our discussion about the changing role of the university professor with Jeff Williams, an English professor at Carnegie Mellon University, author of a piece, The Great Stratification, that appeared in the Chronicle of Higher Education. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest who wrote a piece for the Chronicle of Higher Education, who says we are experiencing a great stratification in academia. And we are discussing why this is happening and why it matters. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Jeff Williams, an English professor at Carnegie Mellon University, one of the editors of the Norton Anthology of Theory and Criticism. And before we go back to the phones, Professor Williams, I wanted to ask you about, in your piece, you also speak of the stratification of other professions as well, like medicine. Tell us about that and how this stratification that we're seeing in education, in higher education, is happening in other professions too.
Right, that's a good question. Because one thing I found in my research, I was sort of surprised. I've been interested in how professions work, and I found that, in fact, now nearly about 22% of American workers are considered to be professionals. And so rather than professionals being a small class that's what it had been, say, 100 years ago, professionals were relatively rare. And it was presumably a very good job, whereas now, in fact, professions are almost a quarter of our jobs. And this is usually, you know, seen as a great thing, and that's why usually it's touted that we should get an education. However, what's happened, though, I think that professions aren't what they used to be in a way, insofar as there's a lot of split, I mean, there's a lot of gradations among professions. Like, it's good, presumably, if you're a cardiologist. I mean, that is, it's a high-paying salary or a respectable job. However, nurses are also considered in that, and that's probably a good job, too. I mean, nurses would make, on the average, about $65,000 a year if you're a registered nurse. So, in other words, there's this great growth of professions, and the problem is though, if the jobs are leveling out, it's not quite what it's cracked up to be. So maybe we should figure that out. And part of the point of the article is that in medicine, not that that has a perfect labor system, but they seem to have a more rational system. And if there's doctors, there's also now nurse practitioners and physician assistants, which are a fairly large category. And there's nurses, but they're all paid fairly well. Nurses, like I said, make about $65,000 on average. Doctors make about $155,000 on average. And in between, there are nurse practitioners and physician's assistants who make about $90,000. So, you know, that seems a more reasonable, if you do have gradations, a more reasonable labor system than what we have in academe, where professors on average make, say, between $70,000 and $100,000, but adjuncts make, say, $2,000 or $3,000 a course. That's the average. So if they're teaching five courses, which is a fairly heavy load, they're only making $10,000 a semester or $20,000 a year. So that's just, you know, that's poor wages and nearly impoverishment wages.
And that's what you mean by the statement in the article, the American university has adopted its own harsh class structure.
Yes.
Yeah. And right. So you have the full-fledged professor making a lot of money, but the adjunct or the part-time making very little money.
Well, the full-time professor makes a decent salary, probably a little above the average. They don't make a lot of money if you look at all the averages. But the adjuncts, people who are adjuncts are in contingent positions, like Amy was saying. Plus, as she was talking about, it's the feeling of the job too. I mean, I would imagine it's a terrible feeling to not know if you're going to be hired the next term, or not know if you're going to have five courses or three, because if you have five, you can pay your car bill comfortably, but if you have three, you can't.
Let's take another call from John in Waukesha. Hello, John.
Hello. I was just wondering if unions have played a factor with professors, if they are unionized or if they have a history of being unionized, and if that's declined, and if that's a factor in this discussion.
That's an interesting question because there are, I mean, we have such a far-flung system in the U.S. that some states are unionized. I did my graduate work in New York, and parts of that system, the state system is unionized. Almost no private universities are unionized, or relatively few. In Wisconsin, I believe it's unionized, right? But where I taught in North Carolina, which is a right-to-work state, so-called, which actually as a state worker, you can't unionize. And I taught in Missouri, same thing. And now I'm at a private university where there certainly is no union at Carnegie Mellon. So it's very uneven, in other words. But the other thing is, I think that there is a tension in professions about unionization. I suspect in the next 20 years there'll be more prominent unionization efforts. That is that professions usually were considered to have control of the workplace and thought themselves a little above unions, I suppose. But I think that unionization will be one of the directions things are moving.
Bruce in Bailey's Harbor sent this email. The driver for what your guest is describing is economic. I have been an instructional academic staff for the University of Wisconsin Colleges for over 10 years. I teach about 75 students a year. These students pay more than $50,000 in tuition. They pay me less than $15,000. I don't get any benefits. In addition, I teach primarily online, so the university provides little infrastructure for me as an office. It is a very cost-effective arrangement for the institution. So is that it, Professor Williams?
Yes, in a nutshell. I mean, economic is a wide term, right? There are many economic decisions. But as I said, I think that there has to be a policy change. And I guess the thing that I would press the most is that we have to reconceive it, too. It's part of how we even think about it. And education shouldn't be purely a profit-driven enterprise. I mean, even though public universities, I think what that email is talking about is that there's a surplus from whatever work he's doing. So it seems to me it should be as universities or nonprofits, they should be kind of more break-even, and therefore with the policy to have fair pay for whoever's working there and as cheap a tuition as possible for students. So I'd agree with that in general, but it's always kind of dicey because you can say almost everything is economic.
Yeah. Chris in Wisconsin Dells is with us. Hello, Chris.
Hi. you should just be really, really grateful that you don't live in a university system that has a major football team that's attached to a bunch of stuff, that all the money that is going through everything, involved in everything, is going through this money funnel that has to do with the football team, because that is like some amazing thing that needs to be dealt with too. We got to get that out of higher education. We got to get all of the sports crap out of higher education.
You know, I don't know the whole structure of how that's paid for, but I thought that there was a lot of university boosting going on and it paid for itself and such, but I don't know, Professor Williams, in general, are athletics sucking the money out of higher education?
Athletics are certainly complicated because, as you mentioned, a lot of times it's boosters, there's separate streams of funding, although the flip side is sometimes the saying is that sports bring in a lot of revenue, however a lot is spent. So that is, in a way, it's a quagmire of an issue. I honestly don't know what to do about that, because I think I like the fact that Carnegie Mellon is Division III, that the sports are comprised by people who are real students. As I said, I taught at two big state universities before, North Carolina and then Missouri, and I've seen how sports programs are. But on the other hand, there are many people who are big fans of sports programs. So I'm not really sure what the right answer on that one is. Or I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other.
But Chris, what was that your primary point?
No, we just selected a new president. That's sort of the we that it exists in the Constitution. We just selected a new president of the University of Wisconsin system. And for the third time in a row, he's been placed in that position by the people that are placed in those positions that select that person from outside the system. And what I'm feeling is that there's like an incestuousness about this. Is that he's going to cover up all of the sins of the system, and he's not going to deal with it because he knows all the secrets, and they're pinning him down because they're paying him a lot of money. He's getting $525,000 a year, which is not a little piece of salary.
Somebody want to check the salary? I'm not even sure the salary. But I feel a little bit wary here because the new president of the University of Wisconsin system is technically my boss. I'm an employee of the University of Wisconsin Extension. The person selected to head the entire university system was previously the chancellor of UW Extension and UW Colleges, Ray Cross. He was just selected. He had been in the chancellor's job for, I think, 2 years. He was hired from outside the system before he came here just a couple of years ago, and now he is in charge of the system. I think Chris's point was that the university hired its leader from within its ranks, and it would have been better to go outside of its ranks. Do you have any thoughts on that premise in general, Professor Williams?
I think it's a problem that administrators are, as a few callers have said, separate from the faculty and from the general university. That is, that they're, as you say, they're like lifetime administrators. So it seems like all their motivations are different than most people who are in education and have been in education their whole lives. And also, I think about people like to complain about faculty salaries. And as I said, if you look at the averages, they're not especially high, especially given the years of education and all that. But people should look at administrators' salaries. I mean, some are quite, quite high. And the usual rationale is that people wouldn't do the work unless they're paid that. But I don't see why people, I never quite understand that logic. Like, it seems to me, if I were a doctor working on cancer, I think that I would do it just because I thought it was a good thing, or because I would like to be the one made famous in history because I cured some sort of disease. not because they were doing it just for the money. So, you know, I think that the salaries of administrators, in fact, should be looked at, and they might deserve a perfectly decent salary, but they don't really need to make millions of dollars.
Yeah. What about an adjunct professor should teach for the love of teaching and not worry about salary?
Well, people usually say that who are not getting that salary or who don't know anybody who is. You know, if your child were making that salary, you probably wouldn't be happy. If your brother or sister were making that salary, you'd probably feel for it much more. I mean, it's only, low salaries are only a good idea for people who have no contact with, you know, no contact with them, that with people who are making those low salaries. I just think it's patently unfair. And even if people have a love of teaching, I mean, then that's therefore exploiting them. I think, you know, the example of Amy is a good example. I think that she should be paid a decent wage, and she should also have some sort of job security. How that's worked out, that would be up to the individual place, but still, that's not an unreasonable aim or goal, or in fact right, I would have thought.
We are talking with Jeff Williams, an English professor at Carnegie Mellon University. He is the author of a piece that appeared recently in the Chronicle of Higher Education about the great stratification of academia. And we are talking about the stratification of higher education, the changing role of the university or college professor, and we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the changing role of the university professor, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, who has some concerns, at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Talking with our guest about a piece that he wrote in the Chronicle of Higher Education on the stratification of academic labor. And again, welcoming your thoughts and questions. Tell me, Jeff Williams, what was the university professor like in, I don't know, 30 years ago, and how much different is it today?
I mentioned before earlier about there was a period of expansion after World War II, so there were. The job of a professor, I think it was a more common job in some ways. That is that state universities were growing salary differentials of all professionals, whether they be lawyers and doctors, were not as extreme as they are now. That is that professionals might have made a little bit more, but not a whole lot more. So I think it was the sometimes educational historians call it the golden age. I think it's also for students, too. I mean, that's one thing I should be sure to mention, that the stratification is going on with students, that now you have, if you're in the two-thirds who have student debt, it's kind of a rough enterprise, and you're on the bottom tier of that geological, you know, strata of wealth, whereas if you're in the top third without wealth, it's not too bad. I mean, without that student debt, it's not that bad. So I think that we're becoming stratified all around. And so I think it's, in other words, part and parcel of a general, not just a trend, but system of policies.
Yeah.
And so I think we should aim more, after World War II, I think that universities, especially public universities, were conceived of as a great factory of equality. And now they're no longer conceived of that. They're just conceived of in some ways they are, but for the most part now you just hear that they're to get jobs and they're like our society in general. So it should be, you know, the people who are lucky, you have free choice. The people who are lucky do well, and the people who aren't, well, they don't do that well.
Yeah. Well, so do you think all this is hurting the teaching of those students?
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that it's better to be taught by someone who has a fully fledged job, as I mentioned before, who has more of a commitment to an institution. And not to say that somebody who's an adjunct wouldn't have a commitment to their job they're teaching, but they're just pulled in a lot of different directions. So they don't quite have the history, nor just simply the opportunity to have that same commitment. And there are some statistics about that usually students who are taught, for instance, by fully fledged professors generally do better. And then you know, people who are running from job to job.
Let's get one last call in. Erica in Madison. Hi, Erica.
Yes, I wanted to comment on the love of teaching versus the financial remuneration for it. My husband is a retired Foreign Service officer and CIA employee, and is teaching in a small college in Madison as an adjunct professor. He makes $1,500 a semester. And he does it purely for the love of it, because he's up till noon, or I would say midnight, 1 o'clock the night before the class, printing his PowerPoint. And he can only do that because he's retired. I also have a nephew who works at the local technical college as an adjunct professor, as you described, you know, teaching five courses, trying to put together a living. But I think you have to be able to give these people a basic salary so that their basic needs can be met, like all people, so that they can do it for the love of teaching. And
Erica, thank you. I wish I had more time. We have less than a minute. Jeff Williams, for some concluding remarks.
Well, I entirely agree that with the caller that right, people should be paid decently, and I think education will be better. So that seems like a mild thing to say, but I think that that's the direction that we need to go in.
Thank you very much for being with us, Jeff Williams, English professor at Carnegie Mellon University, author of a piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education, The Great Stratification. We have posted that piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing this hour. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, including our big question. Should we allow a 7-day work week in Wisconsin? That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network.